It's the CoasterGallery.com podcast, episode 1202. My name is Joel Rogers, and here's what we're going to talk about today. Robert Sherman died at age 86. You'll hear why he was so important to Disney and music in general. If you want to skip ahead to the two-minute mark, you can hear about Finland's Powerland and Power Park amusement park, home of the roller coaster that has a really unique claim to fame. And if you don't really care about that kind of stuff and just want to learn about photography, skip ahead to the 7-minute mark where I will talk about how to take pictures at night, long exposure photography. At the end of the episode, you'll hear a preview of Mice and Blue Cat People. Huh? Enjoy the show. Welcome to the CoasterGallery.com podcast. It's episode 1202 for March 9th. 2012. Well, let's begin with a follow-up from something we discussed in last week's podcast. Jeff and I argued the merits of the it's Small World rides at Disney parks. You know, I referenced the Sherman brothers. Well, that very day, Robert Sherman died at the age of 86. His brother is still alive. If you're not familiar with the Sherman brothers, they did a ton of music for Disney. They did the music to not only the It's a Small World ride, but the Tiki Room, the Carousel of Progress, there's a Great Big Beautiful Tomorrow. If you've been on Epcot's Journey into Imagination, they did One Little Spark. They did a ton of the movies. Mary Poppins, The Aristocats, Jungle Book, Winnie the Pooh. They were honored with 9 Oscar nominations. They got a ton of Grammy nominations and 2 Grammy Awards. So sad to think that Robert Sherman has died at the age of 86. Tons of good Disney music. What's new in Coaster Gallery this week? Well, I added Powerland not too long ago. Powerland is a park in northern Finland. Started in about the year 2000. A guy with a lot of money decided to do a go-kart track, so he opened the Mika Salo F1 style circuit. And just 3 years later, in 2003, they opened the amusement park. So this was a brand new amusement park. Just amazing to think how quickly it sprouted up. Very clean, very well organized, tons of stuff to do. It's a little confusing because Power Land is part of Power Park. There's also the Power Palace, but it's this huge complex. There's indoor racing, there's outdoor racing, there's kid areas, there's camping and a hotel and just a ton of stuff. A quick rundown on the coasters. If you go to CoasterGallery.com and click on Powerland, you'll see the Vekoma Boomerang, known as Cobra. What can I say about a boomerang? There's like 40 or so of them in the world at the moment. I've been on dozens of them. This is like every other one, except this is the first one with a new train from Vekoma, the Mark 1211 train. A little open-sided, a little easier to get in and out of. Yeah, slight improvement, but you know what? Still a lot of headbanging on that one. Second ride is the Joyride, a neat little ride from L&T Systems, this Italian company called Leisure and Transportation is what it stood for. Founded in 1997, the first L&T coaster I rode was a little one at Lake Winnipesaukee in the United States, and been on a couple other ones that were really nice rides. Sadly, L&T shut down in 2009, so we won't be seeing any more rides from them. Another ride, the Mine Train, just a little kiddie Zamperla, and if you look at the next to last pick on Coaster Gallery of the Mine Train, you'll see that there are a ton of other similar rides or identical rides in the United States. May have a little bit different theme on the front of the car, but they're the same track. A neat one, Neo's Twister, a spinning coaster. Brand new, it was just a couple weeks old when I was there in the summer of 2011. A couple interesting notes for you, a split lift hill. You'd go partway up a lift, and then coast for a few feet, make a 90-degree turn, and then go up the rest of the lift. So kind of a way to go around the corner there. Kind of odd. This was made by the Italian Fabri Group. That's a manufacturer that I've been on a couple of the rides. Not a lot. They mostly do small and portable rides. So this is one of their larger and more permanent installations. Although, honestly, the spinning coaster could be portable. The one in Finland is nicely anchored to the ground, but they do design it to be easily torn down and relocated. And then finally, probably my favorite coaster of that day was Thunderbird. This is a great coaster made by, well, pardon the pun, Great Coasters International, GCI. GCI, I think, is up to their 17th coaster this year. This one was made in 2006. The trivia about this one is that this coaster is located further north than any other wooden coaster in the world. It's flirting with the Arctic Circle. It's 62 degrees north, for those of you that know a little bit of geography. Got cool Millennium Flyer trains. Great ride. I love this ride. It's just good, smooth, quality, just a ton of fun. Good airtime, lots of twists. Like any good GCI ride, it is twisted. There is not any straight track anywhere in this entire ride. Just a ton of fun. Photography-wise, if you look at the first picture on Coaster Gallery of Thunderbird, profile of the hill, got a really cool sky. That's really what the sky looked like. It's a little technique known as HDR, or high dynamic range. We're going to get into that in other photography episodes, but for now, I hope you just enjoy it. A couple interesting things about Power Park and Power Land. Kind of some strange theming. Some of it was an Italian town kind of theme. There were some military aspects. There were several airplanes just parked there, some military equipment, kind of an interesting mix. And then what I thought was the most amusing was there was kind of a Wild West area, kind of themed like the Wild West of the United States, which is really odd because, well, it's Finland, and they had some audio animatronic ones. They had this one guy kind of dressed in cowboy John Wayne type outfit, and every once in a while he would talk, and you know what? I don't know Finnish, so I couldn't understand a word he said. But it was very odd to see this cowboy go, I wanted him to say partner, but the best gag, the guy occasionally would spit. I tried to get it on tape, but I couldn't. I wanted to record it, but I just missed it. But at one point, he takes off his hat and goes, and here comes a real slug of water coming out of him. Hilarious. Now, a quick photography tip for today. We are in the middle of the best solar activity in the last 5 or 6 years. The sun cycle, the sunspots are on about an 11-year cycle, and we're getting to the active area. So one of the effects of this here on Earth are the Northern Lights. Now, the Northern Lights weren't really that great on this last round. They thought they were going to be spectacular. Honestly, space weather forecasting is about where meteorological forecasting was on Earth about 100 years ago. So they're just starting to figure out how to predict what's going to happen. But here's a neat possibility. If you live way up north, like northern Finland, where Powerland is, you might see some wonderful northern lights. And it's hard to photograph, but I'm going to give you some tips on how to do some low light or nighttime photography. Even if you don't see the northern lights, it's getting warm now. It's springtime when I'm recording this. The weather at my house is in the 60s, so it's a great time to go outside. Do some low-light photography, stars, landscapes, architecture, plenty of opportunities. But here are a couple things you need to do these long exposures at night. First of all, you need a tripod. You can't hand hold for several seconds. You're going to just move too much no matter how steady you are. So either a good quality tripod, in a pinch, a something small, one of these little portable 6-inch deals or GorillaPod might work, but try and get the big tripod. In a real pinch, you can place your camera on something solid. I've done that at amusement parks. I'll find a nice trash can or fence or something, plop the camera down on there. The trick to these long exposures is you need to somehow control your shutter speed. Now, if you have a $100, $200 point-and-shoot, you probably can't. You get into that $300, $400, $500 compact range, like a Canon G12. If you've got a digital SLR in that $500 to $1,000 range, like a D700 if you're a Nikon shooter, or if you're a Canonista with a Rebel, something like that, you will have several ways to control the shutter. You could put it on time value or shutter priority, depending if you're a Canonista or a Nikoniac. Or you could just go flat out manual, where you do not only the time of the shutter, but the aperture. And I know that we haven't defined aperture and shutter speed. We will on future podcasts. But for now, dig into your manual if you're not familiar with how to do this. Shutter speeds, how long of a shutter speed? Well, it depends how much light there is. And honestly, I have no idea. So the advantage of digital photography is you could experiment. It's cheap. It's easy. Take an exposure. If it's too dark, shorten that time. If it's too dark, lengthen the amount of time. If it's too light, shorten the time. So a little bit of trial and error. Watch the monitor. So how long of a shutter exposure can you do? Well, most compact cameras will give you 15 seconds, maybe 30 seconds. After 30 seconds, you'll probably need either the bulb mode or some kind of remote trigger. Now, the bulb mode means the shutter will stay open as long as you push down on the shutter button. The problem is that's going to give vibration to the camera. So I would recommend some kind of manual or remote shutter release. You can get a cheapy one, 10, 15 bucks at a camera store, plugs right into the side of a camera, and you can do the bulb mode on there. You can hold it as long as you want. I've got one where you can just lock it in, so you can, you know, lock it and the shutter stays open for minutes or however long you need to. You could also get a more sophisticated one. You can get an intervalometer, which is a fancy way of saying it's a programmable one that you can take multiple exposures. If you're doing time lapse, you can set what kind of interval, how often they take. One other thing you could do if you don't have a remote release is to just use the timer. Set it for 5 or 10 seconds and then take your hands off the camera. Another handy feature to minimize camera vibration is mirror lockup. If you have a SLR, which stands for single lens reflex, there's a little mirror in there that literally moves out of the way so you could take a picture. Well, the movement of that mirror makes a little camera shake. So if you go way down into the custom functions of your camera, you can find this thing to enable mirror lockup. So the first time you push the shutter button, the mirror slaps up out of the way, let the vibration settle down, and then the second time you press the trigger, the shutter release, all that happens is the shutter opens. The mirror does not have to move. Another way you might avoid this mirror slap is to use live view. I think that's the Canon term. Nikon probably has a similar one where you can look at the LCD screen on the back of your camera instead of looking through the viewfinder. That too helps prevent that mirror slap messing up your photos. One minor thought: if there's a lot of light coming behind you, that light might get into the viewfinder and actually bounce around and affect the image. So you might want to block your viewfinder once you have the shot composed. Block it off, piece of masking tape, or if you have a really fancy camera, you might even have some kind of blocking feature in the viewfinder. Some little details to make it even a better shot. If you're doing manual mode, what kind of aperture? Well, you're going to want somewhere kind of a middle aperture, 5.6, 8, somewhere in that neighborhood, give you a decent depth of field. Again, if you're not really comfortable with these terms, we will come back and define them another time. What kind of ISO? Another term I need to come back and define. But the ISO, try and keep it low. The higher the ISO you have, the more noise you're going to have. Speaking of noise, there are a couple ways to minimize noise. Most SLRs or DSLRs have what's known as some kind of long exposure noise reduction or a high ISO noise reduction feature. You're going to have to dig into the menus of your camera. That's probably buried somewhere in the manual. The long exposure noise reduction essentially takes two pictures, one with the shutter open, one with the shutter closed. This is going to double the time it takes to take pictures. So if you take a 60-second shot, you take 60 seconds of filling the sensor with light, and the shutter closes, and then it takes another black 60-second picture, combines the two to reduce the noise. It helps somewhat, but like I said, it doubles the time that you're going to spend taking pictures. Lots of ways to do it in post: Lightroom, Aperture, Elements, Noise Ninja, Photoshop. There's tons of ways to reduce that noise, but the best thing you can do is to avoid it to start with, so shoot at a low ISO. You're going to want to shoot in RAW versus JPEG. Again, more terms we need to define, but shoot in RAW if at all possible. Check back next couple weeks. We'll have a RAW versus JPEG discussion. And finally, what kind of focus? The automatic focus of modern cameras needs contrast, and at night you're just not going to have it. So you're going to need to put it in manual focus. Somehow focus at infinity. Find something that's well lit, a long way away, focus on that, put it in manual, and then leave it. Something like that. So go out there, experiment. You might be surprised what kind of fun you have with nighttime photography. I'll post a couple examples here once the show notes get a little more organized. But for now, you'll just have to go to coastergallery.com and see what's on there. That's it for this week. Thanks for listening. If you have any feedback, you can email me at joel@coastergallery.com. You can also touch base with Coaster Gallery on Facebook or G+ or Twitter. I'd love to hear about your experiences with coasters or photography. Next week, we're going to talk music. We're going to talk Disney. Is Avatar coming to Disney? Yes? No? Are the Blue Cats going to team up with the Mouse? Lots of rumors flying, so check back next week. Have a good week. Go have fun, whatever you do.